Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's got Star Trek, Episode 43, Lower Decks, Season 1, Episode 7, Much Ado About Boimler.
Greetings. I am the Division 14 medical specialist.
Oh, thank you. I'm Tendi, and this is my dog, the dog. And let the record show, we're here under protest.
I must warn you, stepping aboard this vessel is consent to be surrounded by dark abnormalities and the clinically obscene.
How long will it take to get to the spa? I wasn't sure how many books to bring.
Do not trouble yourself with the journey. The farm cures all.
Okay, so I've started recording, so now it's up to you guys.
It's got Star Trek.
It's up to you guys to come up with some clever way to initiate the program.
Oh, that's great.
She hand-edited how many sequences?
I don't know. 6 million and change.
What?
Close in a sense, but off numerically by a lot. It was actually 6 billion.
Oh, 6 billion.
So see, it was like you got to 6 million, but that's a lot worse than you would have been more Tendi, accurate to say 1 billion.
Ensign Tendi edited 6 billion, presumably with the help of
For the dog.
With some,
for dog.
The dog. Some algorithms. Yeah.
The dog, which turned into many things over the course of the episode,
turned
which
into a
I'd
cube.
Like well, maybe I can list them later or now.
Well, how about we introduce the show then?
It's got
It's got Star Trek.
It's got Cube Dog.
It's got Star Trek podcast.
It's got
this
Cube
is
Dog.
Episode
Cube Dog.
43.
How does that make you feel, Jesse?
Makes me feel old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Me too. Because we put out one episode per year.
Yeah.
That's how
we're
we
like,
do
we're
this.
Like 83 now.
That's how we do this. Yeah, welcome. It's got Star Trek podcast, episode 43, talking about Much Ado About Boimler, Lower Decks, episode 7.
You know, the craziest thing is for like the longest time, I thought it was actually episode 8, but it wasn't. It was 7.
Yeah, it's like today I was in a meeting and it was, you know, today is Friday when we're recording and somebody thought it was Saturday. So they were late for the meeting and quite upset that it was not in fact Saturday.
Oh, man. Yeah, I would be too.
It's the reverse feeling to when you wake up when you're young, and all of us were young at one point. You wake up when you're young, and you look out the window, and you see that there's so much snow on the ground, they must have canceled school so you can get snuggly back in your blankets. Well, the opposite of that is thinking it's the weekend, and it's not.
I remember I actually had an experience in middle school where I don't say actually that much, all right?
I'm not, that is not one of your verbal tics.
So, yeah, some people say
it was cruel of me to even feign mocking you.
Yeah, you're projecting that shit on me. Side note to the side note, I remember having to watch, this happens a lot, I feel, in sort of tech videos. I had to watch some kind of video for some software
Star
thing.
Tech.
And there's some developer or someone talking about it, and they're you, or even just a salesperson, and like, I'll start to count the amount of times they'll say, actually.
Yeah.
They'll say, actually, you can actually do this with its actual thing. You know, I swear I heard, like, replace thing in those words, but they said actually 3 times, or actually twice and actual once. Anyways. So
further evidence that we're living in a brutal nightmare.
What were we talking about?
We're living in a brutal nightmare, and that's one of the reasons why we enjoy watching optimistic escapist fiction like Star Trek, and particularly Star Trek Lower Decks.
So in my case, well done. In my case,
steering the ship.
Speaking of steering something.
Steering the oil tanker.
I had to actually sit in the bus while they store that bus. Steered.
I have no idea.
Storn.
I don't know if there's a joke in there or not.
Storn the bus. There's not. I'm just trying to think of what's the past as the active sense of steer. Steered as they store the bus. Or is that activist past tense?
I don't think you steered anything.
I don't know.
Well, you steer a bus, you don't steer a train.
Yeah.
All right, start to lower decks.
Wait. Okay. So the reason I said actually, it actually applies here. Oh, God. Fuck you. Okay. Okay. I had an experience where I was on a bus in middle school and they took us to school. It was all snowing outside and I woke up and I was like, ah, no school. And they're like, no, sorry, there actually is school. Ah.
Yeah.
Now I think about it every time I say it.
And you're all like, no, but there's snow outside. And yeah. And your parents are just like, no,
but
you're going to school.
And then an insufficient accumulation.
Well, we got on the bus and got to school and we got inside our school and then they canceled school.
Oh, that happened to me too.
But we were already in school, so they wouldn't let us fucking leave.
Oh, wait a minute.
It was like that Simpsons episode. There was a Simpsons episode where they get trapped in the school, except we didn't like, you know, go like Lord of the Flies on them or anything, but
I was on a bus and like we were on the way to school and then all of a sudden the bus driver was like, "Oh, I don't know." And then like there was a, like we were on a bus forever and then like they took us home.
Yeah, that didn't happen to me. I stayed at the school.
Yeah, that sucks.
And that had to do with 6 billion no, it had to do with guy thinking it was Saturday when it was Friday. Right. And that was me thinking that it was episode 8 instead of 7.
All right. We've extricated ourselves from that particular digression.
We went there and back again, though.
We did, a la The Hobbit.
That's what it's all about.
A la Bilbo Baggins. Bilbo Baggins.
I'll go.
Bilbo. All right, so since this is already a cacophony of ridiculousness, why don't we go ahead and start with the Tendy's dog business. Audience, we'll get through this. Don't worry. It's a loopy night. We will get through this.
We're going to get to some Star Trek eventually.
We're in the process of getting there.
We're
almost there.
Everyone knows podcasts are most successful when you ignore the advertised topic. About 30 minutes.
That's how you get a repeat.
We'll just put it at the end as bonus material.
Nah, we'll suss out the true fans by forcing them to endure.
Good man. We're usually pretty good about it, so I think it's okay this
time. We are usually pretty good about it, so.
Hey, we're a bunch of people.
Yeah.
Talking on the microphone.
Yeah. So, the dog.
The dog, okay.
let's start there.
The dog.
The cute horse. Okay. First of all, we don't need to leave people in tension. There's too much tension out there. I can feel it, especially with all our tomfoolery. Mm-hmm. What did you think of the episode?
I was a big fan. I thought it was fun. It was really starting to feel like it's getting to the point where I'm not thinking so much about the fact that I'm watching a new show, and I'm actually I'm sort of sinking into it a bit, so
it's getting its rhythm.
Yeah, it was good.
I was
entertained. There was a lot going on too.
I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really fun, hitting on all cylinders. I agree with you. You've got enough of the backstory of the characters to sort of enjoy the vibe. And the writers, I think, and the actors and everyone at this point they're feeling the groove. So I hope they keep it up because I was thoroughly entertained from the beginning to the end of this episode.
Yeah, and I don't mean like the newness. I'm feeling less like I'm watching a new show. I don't mean that in the sense that the new fun vibe wore off. I don't mean that at all. I just mean like it's
comfortable.
I'm less focusing on like
it's cozy.
I'm getting more lost in the show. I think. Mm. Yeah, more comfortable and cozy. Right. I love being comfy.
And not to say that it was by any means quote unquote. It's not a perfect show. It's not like this like a 1,000-year classic or anything. I think. You can point to some, you know, a few little things here and there. But despite that, I really, 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 really enjoyed it. And I'm getting to get quite comfortable with all of the characters they present. And they continue to have fun guest characters show up.
Yeah.
What did you think of the episode, Jessau?
I liked the guest characters. Especially the one that's like the, he's like the guy from TAS. Eric's.
Yeah, he's an Edozian.
Yeah,
an
Edozian. He's like one three-armed guys.
I want to say that there was Nolan North, who's like a video game.
Yes, he was. Nolan North was there.
He's like a video game. He's like a big video game actor for IMDb. No, I'm looking on.
I really liked the transporter gag and how he was making the sound of the transporter and it was just stuck and it was just, he was just going like
it was like in a video game if there's like you shoot a gun and then switch a weapon it causes the gun sound to hang around so it like glitches
and
then sticks
just like,
to you
what the fuck what's going on he's like no it's okay it's like no get the hell out of here.
I enjoyed that when Rutherford was able to correct that the issue with the sound,
yeah,
but not the actual phasing out of space thing.
It kind of, that was kind of like a blessing on the to the audience.
It was, you know? Also it was also a very sort of a, you know, an engineering type thing to do, which is, you know, it's just cosmetic. It still, it works, you know.
Yeah,
you,
that's a good point.
It's fine, you know.
and then they're like, it's just cosmetic, all right.
Nolan North was actually in, he was Nathan Drake in that Uncharted game collection that they were talking about making a movie of, but it would just seem like
they're Indiana. In the process of making a movie with Tom Holland.
Oh, in Uncharted?
I think it's with Tom Holland as the Uncharted guy.
I won't write it off, but it just
a
seems like
Uncharted.
It worked as a video game, but as a movie, it's just going to seem like Indiana Jones, but whatever.
Or yeah, Prince of Persia had that problem as well.
Yeah. And I like Jake Gyllenhaal a lot, but that was a weird cast. Yeah. What?
What?
We were just talking about how...
Transporter.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was like a glitch. It like glitched onto him, yeah. Basically.
We're glitching this evening, I think.
Yeah, no, I think we're spot on tonight.
Yeah.
Repairing station grid involved a lot of sprinting.
Yeah, I was.
I just had this image of Tron, of like the Tron video game where you're on those bikes and you're making these like
they're
laser beams.
They're just running across the grid.
Yeah, they're just running around the grid. Like, yeah, or like Burger Time or something like that.
Burger Time.
Yeah, this episode was packed with stuff. And you know, to get back to the Tandy and her dog thing, the one thing that I thought was sort of meta unfortunate was that they showed most of the dog gags in the previews.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, not all of them, but you know, a lot of them.
They did.
So you can see why, because they were funny. The cube one was probably my favorite.
Yeah, the rolling cube
turned into a cube.
Told her, a rolling cube.
Like, yes, or the eyeballs came out like bats. It was out of a cave in his mouth. That was pretty off the wall.
Yeah, it was like some kind of eye bats coming out of his mouth, and then he turned into some kind of gory sarlacc face or something.
Yeah,
you know,
because it was like a sarlacc. Yeah.
There was also the first one the dog did was the scary backward joint spider dog thing that you'd see that the scary girl does in that scary movie where she turns all joints around backwards.
Scary movie with the scary girl.
Then there was one point where he did some disco flashes when he barked twice. I can't remember it was two. He of course at one point he could stand on his hind feet when he wanted to.
I think it was a she, wasn't it?
Oh, she, you're right. Yes. Sorry. And I even wrote that down, that assuming by the voice. And she can talk.
And shoot lightning out of her mouth or something.
Yeah, fly. she can fly, and she can apparently, we didn't get to see this, but she can hover and spit lightning. So I guess you could gather that she could hover from the fact that she was flying, but yeah, so but she still likes to pee on things. Yes. Which is funny.
What I liked about the whole running gag with the dog, literally the dog, that was the name of the dog, was the dog.
Even if it's like, hey, the dog, it's not like, hey, dog.
It was that the individual gags are funny, but it also serves the overarching character purpose with Tendi to reinforce and play with the fact that she's an outside observer of humanity. Right. And that's very Star Trek. That's cool. You know, and it's playing with it, and it's also setting her up for future similar purposes in terms of having that you know, observing things without having grown up with it, so not having a full understanding of it. Something as simple as a dog, with which of course had the great punchline at the end where the actual dog licks her face and she's totally weirded out by that.
Yeah. So this, I guess the storyline was basically Admiral Siltrak. Do we know who Admiral Siltrak is?
It didn't ring a bell.
Yeah.
And I didn't bother to look it up.
So he got Freeman, Shax, and Ransom to do... They were going to the Piscipian.
To do the roulat? Was it roulat?
Well, it said that they were going to their agricultural colony to dispute a territory. But then they needed that... they were called in there because they had... expertise in the germination of roulat seeds, which is somehow going to help a dispute for territories, I guess, when agriculture is involved.
And that's
so that was a funny, that was like a funny kind of like little jibby jew.
It was that this whole, that as little as we saw of them, because it was merely to set up the context of the plot, it packed in a whole bunch of reference jokes that you don't even need to know them to appreciate the humor. Mm-hmm. But one of them was the roulette seeds. That's a reference to Major Kira at one point. I forget exactly what the situation was. It was some sort of subterfuge. She was trying to fool somebody saying this ship only was carrying some roulette seeds. Maybe it was infiltrating Cardassian space might have been it. That they were pretending they were carrying these seeds. And then the more overt reference
yes,
is
I think I know what you're gonna say.
The senior staff, you know, you go ahead, the senior staff going on some crazy mission.
Yeah, and they're wearing like their Starfleet covert secret clothes. the black outfit.
Like Picard was wearing that when he goes to
yeah,
that mission.
Yeah, which is pretty awesome. And of course, they with the animation, they can do a cool scene where they're doing flips and stuff, which is, you know, maybe some people don't like that, but I think that's kind of fun.
I like it. I like the kineticness. And also just the idea, the overall kind of nerdy idea that they're taking it so seriously. There's a whole like planting these, you know,
yeah,
you know, seeds things. And it's very brief, but when you see them on, they're in the cave or whatever, and Captain Freeman is reporting in, holding her jar with the plant in it. If you look closely at Shax, I mean, he's all like, it almost looks like he's been through battle, but like you can tell he's just bored. You know, I mean, he's taking it seriously, but there's just a funny look on his face, and I like that they, you know, they slip a few little things in there, so upon rewatches you catch a few things in the background that you didn't necessarily get the first time through.
Yeah, she was talking about how she was trying to, like, you know, pump it up by saying those roulette seeds were highly volatile, so they got to plant them soon. It's like highly volatile, like they're going to explode or what? They're just not going to grow unless
I think they're just not going to grow.
Yeah, so she's playing that up.
But, you know, that goes back to the Trouble with Tribbles, which was all about the Quadra Triticale, and, you know, which was a Quadra Triticale, a special form of wheat that could grow on the planet that was disputed between the Federation and the Klingons.
Mm.
But anyway, so just yet another plot that was driven by the concept of some sort of agricultural concern.
And then the other plot was also involving some kind of seemingly asinine kind of thing. They had to fix
the water purifier thing.
It was like, was it a purifier? It was a filtration. Yeah, it was a filtration. So Amina had to show up, and she was all, you know, being like, you know, couldn't pass up a chance to, you know, engage in some water filtration repair or whatever.
Did those aliens say something about, like, we osmos are Globally Glorbs? What did they say?
Our brackish. They said something about brackish.
Our most brackish thanks.
Yeah.
And it was called King Phibius. Yeah. King Phibian, I think.
Yeah.
That's pretty. It was silly, but charming.
Yeah. So,
oh, and by the way,
they had those overalls on.
Yeah. Well, okay. So you made me realize something that I didn't actually catch on any of my viewings, which is, there's that scene where what's the name of the captain? Amina.
So, that's the sub captain that comes in.
Yeah, the substitute captain, as opposed to a submarine captain.
Babysitter Jellicoe. Mm-hmm.
Just to clarify.
Yeah, it was a little confusing at first.
So she's sort of kind of making fun of Captain Freeman after the communications cut off. It's like, oh, I guess they are on a real serious mission. But then it turns out that, yeah, her serious mission is just similarly, as you note, Dan, a similarly banal thing.
Yeah.
Fixing a water filtration unit for some salamander people.
Yeah. So when the Rutherford, So there's Amina that comes up, and then she's got her people, Warren, Pratchett, and Durga. And Durga is the Vulcan who like, mm-hmm, of course, smugly notes that Mariner is, oh, she's, you're so great, yet you're an ensign. Yeah. So which is,
what kind of alien is the tall purple guy?
Rigelian, I believe.
So you're talking about the guy with the long, who's the long hair guy?
Yeah, I think that's the Rigelian, with the purpley business.
Okay.
I'm not lore that's within my brain. That's lore that was told to me by,
because I know I've seen that
by Memory Alpha
kind of alien before, but I just didn't remember what they were called.
Memory Alpha says Rigelian.
I think they got a trill too, right?
It appeared to be, although there are a couple of species that, due to 1990s
weird shit on
TV
their face,
budgets, just have magic marker on their face.
Yeah, Boimler goes back to the doctor place with Colonel Cat. And I'm just really trying to push that one to this point. This is the uncomfortable part where it sounds really forced.
Where you're retroactively trying to make it cool.
Yeah, right.
Colonel Cat, Chief Medical Officer Ta'ana.
Ta'ana, yes.
The editing was really good for that sequence you were talking about, where it's they did a lot of that in this episode. The director was transitioning scenes really slickly, where it's sort of Boimler in the middle of talking, and then all of a sudden he's like in a completely different scene talking to somebody else.
Yeah, it moved along well. And so I guess he was really whiny. Like he reminded me of Fletcher from last week, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, he was all whiny about like his hairstyle to Rutherford. And he was all like, does it look good? And he's like, yeah, it's great.
He's a kiss
he's
ass. Like, he wants to kiss ass.
He goes, you didn't even look. And he does like a pee-pee dance kind of thing. And yes, he is a kiss ass. And Mariner even noted mm-hmm. that. It's like, you're looking for a new
group of people to kiss their ass.
Yeah, she's like, you're looking for a new butt to kiss or something like that. Which I thought was a clever way of putting it. New butt to kiss, you know? And so...
Fresh
and then clean. I think he says that later on. Like, he says something about a new butt to kiss. He's getting ready for butt kissing or something.
Getting ready for it. Real quick side bonus previous episode factoid, thanks to our friends over at Reddit, which was that Ensign...
friends on Reddit.
Ensign Fletcher, who was one of the main characters that propelled the plot in last week's episode, Temporal Provocations, episode 7, he actually appeared in four previous episodes of Lower Decks.
Wait, which character?
Fletcher.
I totally remembered that, but like I remember seeing some dude with a big crazy mop of hair, but then like once he became like a dude with lines, I forgot that he was just the background.
I didn't even notice that.
Well, and here's that's what's so cool about it, because to my mind, that's a brilliant solution if you want to live in a modern world that has enhanced continuity, but you want to do episodic storytelling. A great way to do that, particularly for, you know, hyper nerd Star Trek fans, is to continuously seed the backgrounds and episodes with things that will become relevant over time and build up, so that you get that extra jolt of adrenaline when you notice it.
Ooh,
or
this is a delight.
A slightly less impactful, but less fun jolt of adrenaline when somebody else points it out to you.
Yeah.
It's also good.
Yeah, Easter eggs interesting because, you know, obviously, I mean, it's known that I don't like spoilers. A lot of people don't like spoilers. I'm nothing new. Maybe some people might think I'm a little bit more anal than others.
Spoilers are great, man.
But like, I don't care about learning about Easter eggs. You could consider it on a similar level, because it's both titillating, right? Yeah. Like when you find out a cool twist, you're like, ooh, and you find out an Easter egg, you're like, ah. And so you'd think that it would be the same principle, which it kind of is in a way, but I like hearing other people talk about Easter eggs.
I think it's fun. Also, I think everyone expected that this show would have tons of Easter eggs in terms of references to other shows, and not just direct references, you know, paintings on the walls and trinkets and stuff in the background. But what they're doing that's so great, and the Fletcher one is maybe the most acute example, but there are some others like Tendi.
He is a cute example.
Like Tendi seeming to have an affection for Mexican Tex-Mex food, right? Mm, she's always seems to be like eating nachos and stuff. They are adding these little things that are Easter eggs within the context of Lower Decks itself,
right?
Which is an added layer, and I think that's really smart to do from a writing perspective, because it offers another avenue for investment of attention into the program once people start figuring out that it's happening, which people have started to figure out.
I was wondering if, and now that you said that about him, Fletcher being in the beginning, now I'm more convinced that we'll probably see Fletcher again at some point in the future, I would imagine.
Possibly.
Because first of all, it's kind of weird, like he would just be in the one, have no role, and then the next episode he would be gone for good. But maybe it was just like someone made an extra and was like, let's just make a character about that guy and get rid of him. So who knows? But, you know, I thought it was... I thought he was a
fun character.
Yeah.
Well, he might come back and it'll turn out he's like running a mining station or something like
that.
They'll have to deal with him maybe. Him and Badgy will show up.
Badgy.
Mm.
So the reason Boimler looks all fucked up is because Rutherford's trying to increase the transporters by 0.07 seconds or something. Yeah. Why did he just do it on smaller organisms? I don't know. Maybe human. Or do it on a pig or something like that, you know? Maybe just, I guess they just didn't have any... any handy. So, you know, no big deal.
It fits into Rutherford's character as being a
cavalier about his...
Well, he has an above-level competence in engineering, but he goes a little too quick with it. He did the same thing with Badgie in episode 7, where he knew it wasn't ready, but he was still playing around with it because he wanted to impress Tendi. Mm. And here it's almost a similar
episode
thing.
Episode 6.
And it's combined... It's combined... Oh, yeah, episode 6, sorry. And it's combined...
You thought it was 7.
This is 7. No, episode 8's not until next week.
I did it.
You did it. You fucked with my brain.
Yay.
Stop.
Yeah, so this time it was combined with, it was Rutherford and Boimler, both in their own, in ways that made sense for their characters, are both rushing into something and causing themselves this problem. Boimler wanted to impress the substitute captain, and imagine how ridiculous that sounds. That's like trying to impress your substitute teacher.
Yeah,
right? You know the person's not going to stick around forever. Now, in his case, there is some amount of professional, obviously, you know, it may be useful for your career if you have somebody else out there who is impressed with you.
The line was actually, I see it, Mariner said, "You're just excited to kiss a whole new butt, aren't you?" So that was in case anyone was wondering without having to go back and look at it. But yes, totally. It's Absolutely. It's
thank you for settling that.
Yes, of course. And yeah, so he goes to try to impress this new captain, and of course he gets all fucked up and like he gets sent away, and then the joke is there, like once he gets to that place he finds out he wants to stay because it's super seems there's like, you know, there's all sorts of fun stuff to do there. Yeah. And then of course they violently throw him back into the ship.
Right, because he's no longer a freak.
You're no longer a freak, so we're gonna violently throw you back into the ship. And then Boimler is just another case of Boimler's foiled again, and he's not even trying to do he's just trying to do good. Mm-hmm. The good guy just getting foiled. So, you know.
So one thing with the farm story, I mean, there's a lot in there to unpack and a lot that's great, but we must not ignore the fact that fundamentally this was a story about you have a dog, and then the dog, the parents say your dog has to go to the farm.
Oh, I think
you know
get
what I'm
that.
Saying? Yeah. It was like a playing around with that concept of the dog, and then Boimler is kind of like, in some ways, like a little cocker spaniel, you know, an overexcited, desperate to please cocker spaniel. So it. Even though this is the first time they've sort of split the two pairs, in that this time it was Boimler with Tendi, right? And Rutherford's doing his own thing, and then Mariner's doing her own thing. But it wasn't really Rutherford and Tendi. It wasn't Boimler and Tendi. It was Boimler and the dog, with Tendi relating to the dog more than to Boimler, because they were positioning Boimler to be sort of equivalent to the dog. They are both freaks that are being sent up quadrant to the farm.
Yeah, I wasn't totally clear on at what point the dog got sent to the, like, what the, when the decision was made to send the dog to the farm. I just know that it just ended up on the ship with them. So I
think we're just supposed to assume that, you know, people were like, this is a freaky-ass monster dog. Because he was.
And the
she
ship
was
that's all like the Batmobile or something.
It was some scary-ass
like
ship.
Like scary,
it was an experimental.
Scary car.
It was
ship.
An NX. It was the
NX75300 Osler or something?
Yeah, the Osler or Osler.
Osler, oh.
I don't know how it's pronounced.
Yeah.
However you like. Osler.
Osler.
Osler, hi, welcome to the Osler. Welcome aboard.
Division
we saw the freaks.
14.
Yeah, who deals with space mysteries or
which
something.
Which might be a new thing. Is that a new thing? Does anybody recall?
Seems like that's a new thing.
It's unsolvable space illnesses and science mysteries, which Boimler thought was the time travel police. Yeah, I don't know. Division 14.
It makes
what
sense.
What other divisions do we know about?
You got like Section 31, and you've got the time cops. You know, Goldie and Luxler, Moldy and Skuxler. I forget. Whatever it is, they're anagrams of Mulder and Scully from Deep Space Nine, the Federation.
I was not aware of that.
Time police. Scully and Mulder, Lumley and Joanna Lumley.
Wait, okay.
Joanna Lumley.
The guy that's sort of like the head freak that's like half a rascal or whatever. Yeah. Like
half a rascal. half a rascal. Like
he was wearing one of those kind of gray style uniforms, and you see again like this kind of weird mix where some people have like one kind of uniform and some people have a different kind of uniform that there's all sort of supposedly taking place at the same time. And
I enjoyed the collection. Yeah, that collection of freaks was interesting. First of all, they did an actual freaks homage from the movie The Freaks. Instead of saying one of us, you know, it was a similar thing to that movie Freaks. which has been banned in a lot of places. It's a controversial film, but worth checking out if you're a film historian or interested in movies.
I think the freak that stood out to me the most at first was he was the man with the head, like a half exploded asteroid.
You should also watch
where there was like floating.
And it was like, and he had along with that half exploded asteroid head, he had the gravity perspective that it would have if it were the size of an asteroid and far away. Yeah. It's like as if you were looking at it as it was an asteroid from that distance, but it's like right there. Because it all looks like it's slowly going to like separate, but it's like it's still. So that was the... And there were some of them that... There was one dude who was just a tall dude with a weird long face.
Yeah, I like long face dude.
Yeah, but was he a freak or was he just an alien? That's kind of like at that point...
It was hard to tell.
Presumably... A freak. I mean, we're
one
saying
guy
freak,
had,
which
one
is
guy had
unkind.
A head that like went out this way too.
Yeah, he had a squishy head. But the point of being is like, how can you differentiate between alien and freak at that?
One guy was just a head.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was just a head.
I don't know exactly.
And he was sitting next to a guy with a head in his head in his lap.
Yes, and I'm not sure.
The guy
that
just a head, like all jumped into the water and all splashed.
Yeah, like he's doing a cannonball.
The only the closest reference I have is it really looked like there's this. There's these three heads that look very similar to that in Miyazaki's Spirited Away. That's what I thought. I don't know if it's a reference to that or if there's something I'm missing from.
You're talking about the tall head guy?
No, the just the head guy.
Oh, just the head guy.
Just a head.
Just the head
bouncing
guy.
Around because that's what they do in Spirited Away.
There was a dude who just had like a whistle, like a coach whistle for a head. There was another one who had eyeballs all over his head. They did the spider trick again where there was a woman with backward turned joints who was a spider on the ceiling. It looked like her joints were backwards. I mean, maybe they weren't, but that's just like what the dog turned into earlier. And so they hit on that one twice. There was some person who had bug arms and an antenna with like two different colored eyes. There was the person that was through the other person. There was a person whose face was on their chest.
The person through another person had a great line where the woman said, we have two of everything.
Yeah.
I was like, not everything.
Yeah, that was kind of clever. Yeah, that was like, wait a minute.
Because you immediately start thinking, like, what are they talking about? Assholes, penises, vaginas.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
What is it?
Yeah.
Open to interpretation. Increases the engagement of the audience. My favorite had to be Anthony, because Anthony was the what do you call it?
There was the catfish dude.
Yeah, well, I called it the giant salamander maybe man.
Oh, salamander maybe man.
Because they said, did he used to be a guy? And they were like, we think that's what we think. But that was a reference that had
Star
to
Trek
be,
to the salamander episode.
No, that had to be a reference to Voyager's. Threshold episode, I think it was Threshold,
Janeway and Paris, yes, turn into salamanders.
Evolve into salamanders and have sex with each other.
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
Because if you look at pictures of, I mean, the salamanders look very similar. They have similar markings and stuff. So that was fun.
I can't remember if there was a salamander in the TNG episode where they all devolve back.
There was
into
an iguana.
Spiders.
The cat, the Data spot cat turns into an iguana for some reason.
Yeah.
And Riker turns into a Cro-Magnon man.
Yeah, that's pretty funny.
That's a weird episode. But the Voyager episode is considered by many to be the worst episode of Voyager, and by others still to be one of the worst episodes of Star Trek. Mm. I don't know. You could debate that. It is weird, to say the least. It's a weird episode. But
I think I'm going to check it out.
You should, yeah. And it's, Voyager's fairly episodic, so you can hop in and out there. You can check that one out.
There was one person who actually turned out to be three people who was funny. The gag at the end was where they were wearing bathing suits, where they were in that like person vehicle chair, you know,
the Captain Pike chair.
Oh.
You mean the Delta Radiation?
The chair that you sit in because you can't move.
Yeah, that's the Captain Pike chair.
That's a Captain Pike chair?
Yeah, that's what happened to Captain Pike. He also had Delta radiation, and he was in one of those chairs where like only your head's sticking out, and you can only beep with the lights.
So has that been in Star Trek, do you think?
It was in Futurama, too.
Was that? Okay, so I'm trying to figure out where this originated, because it was also in South Park.
Comes from Captain Pike.
It was the episode of South Park where they were remembering back when they were in preschool and like or kindergarten or something, and they accidentally set their teacher on fire, and she ended up in this thing.
That is a reference to Star Trek. It's season one, The Menagerie, two-part episode.
Which uses bits of the cage.
Precisely.
Right?
Okay. It takes the unaired pilot, The Cage, and they wanted to use that footage, so they stretched it out into a two-parter and wrapped it around with
I
the
need
whole
to see that.
Putting Spock on a court-martial and Captain Pike at that stage, because not in the cage, obviously, but in the menagerie, has been damaged by the Delta radiation. We learn more about that situation a little bit in Discovery Season 2, for those who haven't caught on. And yeah. Anson Mount as Captain Pike.
Anson Mount. Word up.
Real quick, there was a dude with half a pig face. There was also a dude with a duck bill. There was a dude with a lump.
Yeah, the duck bill. I laughed. It's so stupid, but I laughed out loud when it panned past the duck bill guy.
It's also laughing at first because it's ridiculous, and then laugh again because I'm like, oh, that's my boundary here on this
one.
Yeah,
that's what's doing it for me.
Yeah, that's the problem here. Then there was the lumpy head, which Jesse referenced earlier. Mm. And then there was some person with a moon head, like a crescent moon head, too. Yeah. So...
What, do you think that was evoking the McDonald's moon?
Mac Tonight,
right? The McDonald's, which, by the way, was played. Do you know who it was played by?
Yeah, but I forgot.
Saru.
That's right.
It's played by, was it Duncan Jones? Is that his name?
Doug Jones.
Duncan Jones. Duncan Donuts. Right. Doug Jones played Mac Tonight, is my recollection. I think that was his first gig. So maybe that was a subtle and sly reference to good old Doug Jones.
Doug Jones.
Commander Saru.
The Kelpian. Commander Saru. Doug Jones on Mac Tonight, performed by Doug Jones in his fourth Hollywood job and voiced by Roger Bearer.
Fourth Hollywood job.
Oh, but he wasn't the voice. He was just the motion.
Yes.
That's the same guy. He's got like really curly hair in this.
Yeah.
Doug Jones has curly hair when he lets it grow out.
Yeah. Well, I believe it.
Well, you're looking at a picture.
Yeah, exactly.
Although pictures could be doctored. Photoshop.
He was in that movie as the fish guy.
Yes, he was the fish guy.
Banged that other girl.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all I know about that movie. I haven't seen it, but that's all anyone ever talks about.
What is it? The fish in the water? Sex in the water? The dance in the water?
The taste of water?
The taste of water? The taste of a fishy water?
Are you talking about like water for chocolate?
No.
I can feel it in the water.
We know the name of this movie. It's
called I Can Feel It in the Water.
I Can Feel It in the Water Tonight.
I Can Feel It.
Watch the movie. It's a good movie.
And what's
Doug,
the movie?
Doug Jones is really great.
Yeah. You're talking about the Doug Jones water movie.
It's called like Water for Chocolate. It's by
Shape of Water.
It's called Walter Gimli.
Walter Cronkite.
No, Walter Gimli directed The Taste of Fishy Water.
The Taste of Fishy Water. It's called Shape of Water. The Shape of Water. Which has Oh, man. Remember that Pan's Labyrinth with the eyeballs on the palms of the hands?
Yeah, Doug Jones was in that, too.
Oh, man.
That was
a cool movie.
Doug Jones
but that part
psychopath.
Freaked me out.
You know what Doug Jones isn't in?
No.
Star Trek Lower Decks.
Ah.
Yeah, steering that ship. Steering that oil tanker.
I didn't de-steer this one. I think so. That was someone else, because that wasn't me.
Degrade.
Because I was just talking about freaks.
Well, yeah. And no, the freak ship was... it was clever. I like that they called out that it was needlessly dark and creepy.
Yeah, like mist on the ground. And
it's like, we've been here for months.
Yeah, they made... What was funny is I just assumed that it was some kind... I mean, I knew to expect the unexpected, right? So I didn't necessarily buy into this, but I did catch the vibe and it did affect me that it's like, wow, like what if it is really like this, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like, I suddenly believe that they've been on this ship for years or something and it's just known that it's a death ship. And it just didn't occur to me. It's like, yeah, it was just kind of a little longer than normal. So I thought that they presented that scenario really well in a believable way.
And you know, the headcanon or whatever you want to call it. I mean, you know, Star Trek, we're always coming up with justifications for things they do that are clearly just done for the sake of plot. And in this case, you have these people who have been effectively injured in the line of duty. And by implication, what you can figure out is the intention here is that, unlike on the Enterprise, sometimes when this happens elsewhere, there isn't some sort of magical fix within the 43-minute span of the story. You don't have a hyper-smart android or a Vulcan or an awesome Trill scientist who comes up with some solution to revert you back to normal. So if this is happening all around sort of Starfleet's sphere of influence, you can understand if it takes a little while to go around, pick up all the people, and then take them back to the farm.
Right, yeah.
With the dog.
And it was funny how it's just like they just assumed it was some kind of long-ass ploy to just hide. That's the other thing is like come to expect a sort of corrupt sort of
system. Somebody made a comment on, and I'm sorry, I don't remember their name, but on Reddit, somebody made I thought was a very insightful comment, which was that that joke really only works because of the fact that we are, cynical people and we're living in a cynical time period, right? Because they use the hopefulness of Star Trek to kind of trick us because we are so ready and in some cases even eager to see stories about how Starfleet is evil or corrupt or whatever, right? Some people hate that, but even if they hate it, they like hate watching. Like, yeah, see? Yeah, they're just ruining Starfleet. Well, they tricked us because they really put us in a situation where we're like, we could buy it, that they're going to go to some Dr. Mengele, experimental spaceship in some sort of weird nebula. And then it's like, no, it's actually like a super fucking awesome place they're going. And it's going to be rock and roll.
They got like nurses and stuff.
Yeah. And it's not for cures necessarily. They don't present it as,
it's just for having fun,
holding out hope for a cure. They indicate that sure, people will try, but really it's essentially a very nice palliative care spa.
Right.
We will take care of you as best we can. And that is amazing. And that would be awesome if everyone in the real world had that to look forward to, if shit got so bad and we weren't able to fix it for you, that we could at least, make it comfortable for you. Mm-hmm. With sexy nurses and fields
and swimming pools and
big towers and stuff.
Yeah.
That's a really good point about why it's believable.
Yeah.
So
all credit to that anonymous Reddit poster.
Nobody will ever know who you are.
On the ship is where we have another example. I think it fits into the analogy in this episode of Boimler being the high school student or the elementary school student, because just as he wanted to suck up to the sub, he also immediately rats out his fellow quote unquote students, the people he should be identifying with, immediately with another one of those clever edits where he's chanting and then it goes and he's like, hey, they were doing this. We were all doing this. when he sells them out, he totally rats them out to Commander. Now,
he's like, Brad Boimler told me about it. Brad Boimler, right here.
I think it's very important to note that he didn't rat them out because he's like a piece of shit. He ratted them out from his perspective because he wanted to avoid anybody getting hurt.
Yeah.
And that is, you could debate whether he should have ratted them out or not, but it's a totally valid point. It's more like that episode of King of the Hill where Dale Gribble tells his son to go kill a panda to be cool. and Bobby like rats out on his friend.
Oh, like when he goes to the zoo to like,
yeah, they, yeah. So Dale Gribble thinks if he wants to be really cool and hang out with the cool kids, Joseph should kill a panda. And Bobby ends up, telling his dad.
And Bobby has that dream at the end where he's on Hollywood Squares and he's a panda.
Yeah, it's Bobby Panda. He's like, Bobby Panda for the block.
It's got King of the Hill.
That would be a good podcast.
Yeah, that'll be our next one.
Yeah, it'll just be us being like, remember that time?
Remember when it was cool?
It's like so that Chris Farley sketch on SNL where he's interviewing those people.
That podcast ain't right.
So when Mariner met Amina, I was thinking Mariner
Amina.
So initially I was kind of surprised for just, a couple seconds when she was like super excited about being an upper decker with her. Cause like, oh, she sold out. She just wants to be with her friends. Now, of course, keeping in my mind, I always sort of keep, I wish I could think of the more, more clever, more eloquent way of saying,
I mean, any words will do at this day.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Okay, I'll take whatever you got.
Okay, way of saying expect the unexpected. I'm sick of saying that. I've said that too much. Okay.
So
she sort of gave off the impression at first that she was, it's like, oh, you sold out. You didn't want to do it. But then at the end, she makes a face, you just do the whole, like, they're hugging, and then on the other side, you see their actual face. But then I thought, well, maybe she's nervous. And it took me too long to figure out that she was just trying to, she didn't want it to begin with.
I think this is
which is totally in line with who she is.
I alluded to this at the beginning of tonight's episode, but I think this is where I would have a little bit of a critique in the sort of story structure, because that it all fits in. You know, I watched the episode a few times. Everything fits into her character. Everything's fine. It's just that it wasn't, we didn't have enough clues, I think, to understand that she was self-sabotaging.
Right.
So that for half the episode, we're kind of confused because for two reasons. First of all, that she's, as you note, she's so eager. You know, you can say, okay, well, she just wants to hang out with her friend, but you know, she's volunteering and doing this like and
when
important
mission. And when she made the scare, the sad, the upset, like the not happy face when she was hugging her, where Amina couldn't see her face, so the audience gets to see it. I wasn't sure if it was like she was just nervous.
Either nervous or embarrassment. It just wasn't clear. And then when she started making these errors, it was really weird because initially I had no clue, and I think having rewatched it, there really are no clues that she's self-sabotaging. Mm-hmm. It does make sense in retrospect, but there are not any clues to it. So you're confused because we've been shown up to this point that Mariner is highly competent. Not only competent, she excels. She may, in fact, be, by all evidence, a prodigy of some sort, right? But that she's self-sabotaging because she doesn't, you know, for a variety of complicated reasons, some relating to her parents, possibly, some, you know, whatever. I don't think it detracts that much from my opinion of the episode because I really did enjoy it. It just was another example, and we've cited a few in previous episodes, where I think you feel a little bit of that short time frame. You feel that there's some stuff that they needed to get in there that there just wasn't room for because of all the other stuff they wanted to convey.
Yeah, I also felt that some of the shit she fucked up on was kind of dangerous, unless she truly knew that it wasn't going to fuck shit up. But like, for example, when she was saying, blowing up Amina's spot, you know, saying, oh, when we stole Saul Rubicek's old, I like how she emphasizes special, his old special car. Drove it in the bay. And then she says, so that sort of like throws Amina under the bus a little, not really, but it's still kind of like, well, you're taking her with you on that one. Then I was wondering, she's talking about a scorpion in Ransom's bed. And now in retrospect, I'm wondering, did that actually happen? It totally could have, who knows? But then when she forgets, you know, the tricorders, when she leaves the tricorders in the transplant room when they're trying to...
Transplant room.
I don't know. Freeman
was in the transplant cave.
Yeah.
Transplanting some roulotte seeds.
There you go. She's actually risking lives of the mission because they're trying to fix that the filtration system, and she leaves all the tools back. But I don't know, maybe she knew that Amina would come up with some other way, which she did. But it's still that's putting the mission at risk.
I agree with you. You could argue that she didn't expect there to be this whatever happened with the you know, the dangerous buildup of the clogged line. You could argue she didn't expect that to happen, but it's still reckless.
Yeah, to leave tricorders.
To leave the tricorders. So.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, the message was there, but it was one of those, it's kind of like an Agatha Christie novel where it's all good, the story is good, it's fun, but the resolution is not something you necessarily could have predicted by what was happening during the story, you know?
Yeah, so there were like three other things that she did that actually didn't really harm the mission. She, when they landed, she walked the wrong way on the bog mission. She wasn't paying attention when Amina told her to initiate the long-range scan, and then she hit red alert instead. That doesn't really, you know, that's safe to fuck up on. It's not going to hurt anyone. And then she made her Magno boots fly around when she was wearing them instead of sticking to the ground.
I wanted taller boots.
Yeah, but somehow she knew when push came to shove, pun intended, she actually punched Captain Dayton out to calm her down, because that's when everything got real, because she finally push shove punch
1980s kids stuff. Like a cartoon commercial for like an action figure or something.
Yeah, so, or like the one where you spin it around and it goes zoom zoom zoom, or it could be like a rhythm game, one of those rhythm video games.
Or like Bop It.
They did
Bop It. Yeah, Bop It. Bop It.
Twist It.
Yeah,
that was much later.
Hungry Hippos.
Yeah, games. Mousetrap. That games. Game sucked.
The Game of Life.
Fuck Mousetrap.
You can be a winner at the Game of Life. Hey, look, I've got a wife.
I remember playing Mousetrap.
Kids and taxes, treasure too.
And all I wanted to do was do the Mousetrap, and then I was found out you can't do it till the end of the game.
Well, nobody's ever done the Mousetrap.
It's never been done.
No, nobody ever plays Mousetrap.
Oh, yeah, right.
You set up most of it. That's the game.
This game sucks.
Yeah. It's not even a game. It's a toy.
Yeah.
It's effectively
Rube Goldberg.
It's Legos that don't work as well as Legos.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're just kind of putting stuff together and you get bored of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I never had that one, but I think my sister had that.
I didn't have, my parents wouldn't allow me to have Mousetrap.
Yeah, that's,
it was all Trivial Pursuit and Monopoly in our house.
That's, you're a smart parent.
And backgammon.
I think Parcheesi was, always thought Parcheesi was like one of the dumbest games.
How the fuck do you play backgammon anyway?
Backgammon's pretty cool.
Backgammon's cool, but my dad, I always forget how to play. My dad's like, let's play some backgammon. I was like, I don't know. He always won, but I didn't know the rules. So.
Well, he did that in some other country he visited.
Seems like
probably.
Some kind of, they're making that up as they go along or something.
I think when he lived in Egypt, and stuff there. They're always sitting drinking tea and playing backgammon.
Yeah.
You know, my backgammon, what backgammon is to you, cribbage is to me. I don't know what the fuck's going on with that cribbage game.
What about
there's pieces and there's cards and it's
cribbage
like,
is like, it's a card game, but you use a funny pegboard to keep score. That's all they're doing is keeping score.
It's got board games.
I guarantee you there's a probably way even more board game podcast than Star Trek podcast out there.
You're probably right.
It's probably a really hard field to break into.
Yeah, it exploded in the past few years, you know?
Especially all them newfangled ones. Mm-hmm. With doodads.
With the AR. What about the AR board games? Anyone played any of those yet?
I haven't, but I've heard tell about them.
Heard tell?
I've heard tell about these.
Wayfarer tell, have you heard them?
You know, on the information superhighway.
So on this ship, when they turn
the Rubidoux?
The Rubidoux?
The Rubidoux. Yeah, the Rubidoux.
Rubidoux is another place in California.
I didn't know that. Do they have wine there?
You'd think it was from Louisiana, but it's not, because Rubidoux sounds like it would be.
Does sound like
a Louisiana.
It sounds like a type of sauce you make in New Orleans.
Yeah, Rubidoux. It does sound like a sauce.
Go get a barrel, mix up a big old batch of Rubidoux.
Yeah.
So they go to that room and everyone's floating around. So every time in sci-fi shows when they turn the gravity back on, it always causes everybody to comically fall to the ground from the ceiling. And like, why wouldn't they just ease into it every day, every time?
Fader.
So they're gonna get squished by a bulkhead or something, you know?
Or one of those giant boxes they were hiding behind.
Yeah, like one of those. Just something's gonna. And it happens in all sci-fi. They always do that shit. It's the
get with the program, all sci-fi. Come on,
and it's
all sci-fi.
And you know
what the fuck? All sci-fi.
It's
100%. Fuck
all of it.
It's funny slapstick, but it's just kind of like, come on, that's unbelievable.
It's not even played for slapstick here. I mean, the
yeah, they didn't even play it up.
The grabbing of the captain is a little bit slapstick, but it was somewhat undercut by her being like, like the actress, the voice actress was conveying legitimate terror at her situation.
It was a weird line when Amina was saying that it was Captain Dayton. She said she isn't exactly punctual, which was, I don't know why they threw that in there, just to show that she's kind of a mess or something.
I think it was merely to be like,
that's why they're running late.
That's why they're running late, because she's a chode.
Yeah, you're right. They didn't, but switching back again after switching initially, they didn't really, that fall wasn't played comically at all, really. It just kind of happened, so...
People were screaming and shit.
Yeah, people were screaming and shit. One thing, they were playing, the music got very Star Wars-y the whole time they were on that Snalian ship.
Snalian?
Wow.
Snalian.
And, yeah, it was all like, it was stuff that it was like, and then it had the, you know, it had those things going on.
That
you know,
was so
the climax.
Accurate, we're going to get a copyright violation.
Yeah, I hope
it's
so.
It's like Duel of the Fates.
Yeah, yeah. Or, no, not like, it was more in like the, was that the episode, Star Wars?
Yes, New Hope? Shadow of the Empire.
Yeah, Shadow of the Empire. I think they might have grabbed
64.
They might have grabbed that from. I don't remember.
Yeah, they grabbed it. That's either grabbed from or slightly rearranged from the asteroid.
Yeah, the asteroid ship.
Star Wars.
Yeah, the asteroid ship. That's what the beginning of the Snalian ship felt like. Was like the. And at the end, it was right before the Death Star. Oh, spoiler alert! Spoiler. Right before the Death Star blows up. Right before the Death Star is about to blow that shit up, but then the Death Star gets blown up.
Star Trek people haven't seen Star Wars.
The first time, it's either the first or the second time, but it's the part where it goes, duh, duh. Du, 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 du.
Yeah,
du, du, du. And he's like fire, and he's like and then it does the halo explosion that people get mad about or whatever. Yeah,
yeah.
So that's what
John Williams is good for.
Yeah, so that's what that music reminded me of. I thought that was interesting. I say everyone go back and listen because it takes a very sharp.
I'm going to go back and listen right now.
It takes a sharp
pause
turn.
The podcast.
But we got this to do.
I can't listen if Dan's going to keep talking like that.
Oh shit!
I'm just playing. What,
like how I've been talking this whole time, or when it was like this.
Hey,
it's like this to do.
Ooh, you should use your worm voice.
My worm voice.
Worm voice.
Captain Worm at your service.
It's a worm ship. The NCC.
Boimler.
You don't serve me. Even though I'm the captain, I serve you.
Was that like a joke about serving food?
I don't know. It was just a joke about, you know, a guy who's like really knows what it takes to be a captain of a ship. He has it down.
Oh, you're developing
spiritually
a character.
And philosophically.
This is a character you're
But
developing.
He talks in the worm voice.
He talks in the worm voice, but he's got skills.
I thought you were making sort of a Twilight Zone to serve mankind joke. I don't remember if that was Twilight Zone or Outer Limits or what, but you know, there's a joke that the aliens come and they claim they are there to serve mankind, but it's a pun. You know, it's mankind is like tight, you're gonna serve us, and then they don't, then it turns out they're actually gonna kill the people
serve
them.
Not like they got served, sort of like you just got served, you know, but like
but
they literally serve them. But it's not the same derivation. I don't think
we're talking about the 90s street basketball slang.
I think dance that movie about dancing was had that that was the Simpsons Halloween.
One of those.
That was inside.
Yeah, that's an inside joke.
Yeah, so that was a.
I thought it was on the podcast.
I don't know. It
only
could
in
be.
The reference to an inside joke.
The Treehouse of Horror, Simpsons Treehouse of Horror, played off that episode where the aliens. It was like how to serve humans, how to serve 40 humans. He kept wiping away space dust and like kept saying, revealing more.
Space is cool.
It's like the whole joke was at first. Bart thought and Lisa thought they were going to eat them, but then he wiped it off and he was like, no, we were going to give you food and be nice to you. And it kept going back and forth over and over again, like five times. Yeah. And it kept iterating that, you know. So that was because the Star Wars. We're talking about Star Wars music and we got to that somehow.
Yeah, you were.
I was.
You were. It was awesome.
Thank you.
I'm looking forward to going back and having an excuse, as if we needed one, to watch the episode yet again.
Yet again.
The this episode further reinforces Mariner's situation about how she doesn't want to get promoted, and she still wants to be a badass, and she's still good at whatever she's doing, but she doesn't want rank and responsibility. And we're just getting more and more of this, and I keep wondering, like what's the deal here? Like what happened to her? It seems like she was probably a higher rank and she got busted down a little bit.
Yeah. So they definitely reference a demotion.
Yeah. So like what happened? And like, you know, I guess we're going to find out eventually, but I'm just like, you know, there's gotta be something going on with Mariner.
Like when is it going to be season one finale or is it something that builds up over time?
Right.
I think we discussed before that we had discussed the idea that it's probably, she did something that from Starfleet's perspective was abrogating the rules and policies, but was in fact a noble an appropriate thing to do.
Sick of it.
And maybe the nobility part of it is that she kept secret the nobility factor. So she took on a punishment that maybe she could have gotten out of if she had explained the situation, but that explaining the situation would have caused harm to somebody or a group of people or planet or something like that.
Mariner, you don't need to keep punishing yourself.
Well, we will find out more. I think this is a good time to mention, you know, we post pretty regularly on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We'll tell you how later. But we got a great comment from one user who they had written an article. They provided a link to an article they had written on medium.com. It was Kayade Kendall wrote an article called How Star Trek Lower Decks Explores the Challenges of Black Women by Subverting a Well-Worn Genre Trope. And what he's talking about is that traditionally, you would see the white man would be the capable, rascally, whatever, breaking the rules and getting away with it kind of thing. And often the woman, and particularly a black woman, would be the more straight-laced, having to go out of their way to demonstrate that they are professional in all things. And we'll have the link to the article. I think it's really an interesting article to read, a very cool perspective and very insightful on how that works. And it made me think about how Star Trek has this hopeful future, right? Gene Roddenberry developed this idea that at some point in the future, we would be free of racism and sexism and all sorts of things. And Star Trek's not been perfect about that, but that's been the, well, yeah, they don't always get it right, but that's the vibe of it, right?
It started in the 60s.
And Star Trek has been really great at tackling contemporaneous issues via metaphor, right? And they've tackled racism in a number of ways. The sort of the original most overt version is the episode of TOS where the aliens have, you know, one side of their face is painted black, the other side is white, but depending on which side the colors are on, you're either the group in power or you're the minority. And those analogies are really great and helpful, but Star Trek does have a little bit more difficulty making direct comparisons to actual contemporaneous things, because in the Starfleet, that's not supposed to happen. You're not supposed to,
right.
if you're a black human, you should not or a female human, you should not feel sexism,
right,
or racism.
Right. You're probably an admiral.
Precisely. And what they talk about in this article, what Mr. Kendall talks about in this article, and what got me thinking about it is that they are able to do it in a more meta way. And Lower Decks has been, I think, subtly doing that by, in the case of this article suggests, it's by inverting the two main characters, Mariner and Boimler. So they're fulfilling opposite gender and racial stereotypes, right? Which is interesting. And just in general, the idea that they can't, have it be direct, but by inference, the audience can absorb some of those messages about sort of the things that people might have to deal with. I think another example was it two episodes ago or whatever, where that there was that on the Vancouver. Remember the Vancouver ship, and that yeah. officer wanted to get off the ship because it was too stressful.
Right.
He was capable of the job, but he didn't want to do the job.
The Dyson sphere.
Because it was too stressful. Yeah, exactly. Like calibrating the Dyson sphere stuff. And the idea that that's an important message, the idea that you can be competent, you can be capable, and yet not want to maximize your utility in those functions because you might prefer to live a quieter life or use whatever skills you have towards something more banal. You don't always have to be saving the galaxy. And that relates to Mariner in a lot of ways. We get hints of that. We don't know if it's a stress thing. We don't know if it's fear or nervousness or guilt. It's something, but she's capable and uses those capabilities when it comes down to it. But at all other times wants to avoid having those capabilities result in her having more responsibility.
Yeah, when I was mentioning the part where she hugged Amina after she was given the temporary role and she made that face, I couldn't tell if it was fear or like she was just like, how am I going to get out of this? I mean, it might have been both. I mean, without looking too far into it, I guess, but it might have been both because, yeah, there is an aspect that, like, she says she needs to spend some more time figuring stuff out, which is understandable. When you're not ready, you're not ready. But yeah, what is that she's figuring out? And she never alludes to any kind of fear, and she would probably deny it, presumably, I don't know. If somebody pressed her on it, maybe she wouldn't. But yeah, so that's the thing, is she really happy? If it's because of fear, would that imply that she's not really happy where she is then, you know? So I don't know if she truly does, but it would be a nice thing to think about them. Yeah. More in the future.
It's an interesting line because you could always argue if things were bad enough or she was unhappy enough, she could simply quit Starfleet. You know, in the Federation, you're under no obligation to be in Starfleet by any means. Right.
Mm-hmm. And everyone gets confused by the idea of being loving something, but not wanting to move up, quote unquote up. And I know that feeling.
Well, and in the contemporary military, at least in most of the branches, my understanding that it's up or out, and that's true of a lot of places, even in the private sector, a lot of places you can be up or out.
Yeah.
You either rise in rank and position or you have to leave. On the other hand, there are people, we all know them, some of us might be them, where you might actually be comfortable at whatever level you are. You have enough income, you have the lifestyle you want, and the idea that a lack of ambition, which is not necessarily the case with Mariner, I will note, but that the lack of ambition is not, doesn't have to be considered a bad thing, right? I think for a lot of people, and even a lot of Star Trek, you know, characters, the lack of ambition would be a negative because they're so used to the idea of, you know, whatever. They're not all Harry Kims who are, Harry Kim was happy being an ensign for 7 years.
Yeah. But the idea of not sort of like trying to go anywhere, it's
Paris got promoted.
Like what you were saying about, you know, how she probably, you know, did something that was against the rules of Starfleet, but it was the best decision in the end. And, you know, who knows? There could be other things other people don't know that she's carrying. Mm-hmm. And she might just be like, look, well, at least I can try to do that here. And what are they going to do? Because she knows that if she gets put back up again, she's maybe afraid, or maybe she's not afraid of doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. That's the thing. Is she afraid that she won't be able to help herself from doing the same thing? Or does she know she has to do the same thing because that's who she is? And she just doesn't want to deal with having to like bunch of people giving her shit again.
Well, and it's, you know, one angle is the giving the shit, and the other hypothetical, and we'll just have to see where they go with this, but the other hypothetical is that when she was in a position of responsibility where she nevertheless saved the day, she may have had to make a decision that, because of her decision, she effectively chose somebody to die, or a group of people to die. It could have been a good, you know, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few sort of thing, where what she did was morally correct, but it still resulted in her, you know, pulling the switch on the train lever, you know, to turn the train into the group of kids or whatever, you know, the old philosophical exercise.
Oh, that thing. Yeah. People blow up.
So, you know, we'll have to wait and see, but what, you know, given, you know, this discussion is itself a demonstration that they've planted so many interesting seeds there, and they've created this interesting character that's hard to wrap your mind around, but we all implicitly, not all, I'm not going to claim all the audience, but I think a lot of the audience, what I see out there in terms of comments, is we implicitly understand that we may not know exactly what's going on, but that something's going on. There's something that's justifying this behavior from her perspective, and that she's got to work through it. So we'll be very curious to see where that ends up going.
So this episode moved. There was a lot going on, and it didn't. It did. I think they did a pretty good job of moving it along, because you think about the main plot was first they were on.
You know that song when moving right along, when Kermit the Frog and Fonzie are driving in that truck, moving right along. It's in one of the Muppets movies.
Yeah.
I do actually.
If it's not in the Muppet movie, it's in like the second one. That's all weird, but I think it's in the Muppet movie.
That's a patented. It's got Star Trek tangential reference.
Yeah.
Back to the regular program.
I'm all for it. So yeah, moving right along, because they managed to do an away mission on the planet and then come back and deal with something entirely different.
Yeah.
Like, and it wasn't just the scenery was different. Like the ship was different. It was just a totally different sort of group. And I guess all that away mission served was to show Mariner being incompetent or something like that.
And also introduce us to King Phibian.
Yeah, right. That's true, too.
Brackish welcome.
So they were able to fit that in there, which is impressive. But it didn't feel like it was stretched too thin. You know, sometimes, like in Mortal Kombat Annihilation, when it introduced all those characters, it's like, this is how many characters are in Mortal Kombat, the video game. But in the movie, I just don't know what's going on. I mean, it had other problems going for it, too, Mortal Kombat Annihilation. But anyways, but the part where, I thought that was pretty cool. And then it was the thing where they tied in sort of a secondary plot to save the primary plot. In this case, it was Rutherford's transporter trick, like that was part of a separate plot line. They did this in a couple other episodes, a bunch of other episodes, and it's not like a new thing.
No, that's a pretty standard. But the writers have to get it to work.
Yeah, a lot of times AMV plots, I feel, don't necessarily, like, the B plot might have something esoterically related to the A plot, but it doesn't.
Thematically, a lot of times it's just a thematic connection.
Yeah, and it's not like, oh, I did this thing that's now going to affect that plot.
And sometimes there's no connection at all, and you get that weird Star Trek episode where the tones are totally different. Like, one is all, like, super intense and depressing, and then there's some weird comical
some kind of thing in
side story.
Holodeck, like, with that singer guy.
Captain Picard misses a some kind of function with a bunch of admirals or something.
Yeah. Yeah. That, well, that's always good for a laugh.
Yeah.
So his transporter pad thing that he made it go, I'm guessing that's why they were able to use to transport. Cause at first they're like, we can't transport all these people off this yeah. thing. And so I guess it's because he increased it by 0.05 seconds or whatever. Or I don't remember if it was 0.05 or if it was half a second or what it was.
He wanted 0.7.
Yeah, it was point. You're right, 0.7.
But he got 0.5.
But then it takes a while for you to like adjust, like yeah. to phase in or something. It
right.
takes you like a couple of days or something.
Right. And so it was worth the risk in that scenario. But I'm wondering, it's like, really, that's all they were short by is half a second? They could have, that's the whole thing that saved it. And whatever, what are those transporter pads needed for anyways? Because they just
all these transporters?
Why do you need all this stuff? They transported like 20, 30 people all over the room. Was that part of Rutherford's?
That's always been the case. It's been hilarious that they have the transporter pads.
Right, because
they're not on the planet or whatever location you're beaming to. Okay, well, this is magic. And then, yeah, right. and then they're always just transporting groups of people back, you know, like into from one place to the other.
There's the thing where they got the emergency transporter bands. I think there was a TNG.
It's like a band that plays in the buffer. Like, they play in the buffer while you're transporting. It's a band going.
They have them on the shuttlecraft, and it was like an arm band.
Oh yeah, the arm band.
It was like
oh right.
It starts out and Picard's on a shuttlecraft with like Guinan and Ensign Ro and
is that a pattern enhancer?
And Keiko O'Brien or something like.
Is that Rascals when they turn into kids?
I think so.
Is it a pattern enhancer or a pattern?
No, it's not even the pattern enhancer. It's like some kind of. That was the only time I ever saw it mentioned. Maybe it wasn't even that episode, but they had these emergency transporter armbands.
It gets confusing because they have armbands that do all sorts of things. Because on TAS they had those spacesuit armbands that just make you glow, but yeah. then it's sort of like also a spacesuit,
right? Yeah.
And then the EMH had his armband that was his
the
holographic emitter, the portable emitter, yeah. so he could walk around outside of the sick bay.
And there's only one episode I can think of in particular, but I feel like I know this is common in TNG at least, is where they have they did have pattern enhancers, which were these three sort of things they would place in a triangle. Them up.
Oh yeah, they use those for sure.
Yeah, they use those
adjust them and wiggle them, and then you turn them and they all.
So maybe it wasn't a pattern enhancer, maybe it was a pattern isolator.
My favorite reference to my incidents of those is in the Time Zero two-parter. Where they find Data's head.
I am Time Zero.
Under San Francisco, and then Captain Picard pals around with Samuel Clemens, with Mark.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that was hilarious.
And they got those aliens. They got like a cane that's a snake.
Yeah.
It's a weird two-part episode.
It is I like that one.
Data hangs out with, is it Jack London he's hanging out with, who's like his bellhop
or
something?
Jack London. Yeah. Like, they throw Jack London in there. And then, like, Guinan happens to be there just off the cuff in that time period.
And whenever I watch that, I always think, it was like, when is Griff Tannen going to show up?
Yeah, I know.
It looks like the same sets. I don't know if it is or not, but...
So... Maybe the transporter pads just like are more powerful somehow. Maybe
it's a Deus Ex Machina.
Yeah, because they never
really a Deus Ex Machina.
Because they're never like, too bad we don't have the transporters here. Then this would be so much easier. Yeah. It's always just like, can't do it. Because maybe if the transporter pads were on the ground, they would be able to get through all that. So tachyon interference or whatever it is that fucks with transporters.
Well, one thing I
probably not tachyon. It's
one thing that I haven't noticed anybody comment on.
Diporphlium.
That Lower Decks is doing is they are using shuttlecraft a lot more, right? And I think there's a literary reason why they're using it, right? The storytelling reason is that shuttlecraft give you opportunity
for one-on-one,
for people to talk with each other, gives you opportunity for some sort of transition between stuff. But
Neo, you know why I don't like you? It's because every time we blah, 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 you bleed it, blah, blue. It all comes out. Like that.
Yeah, because then you get scenes like there's a great scene in Deep Space Nine where Worf is taking Garak someplace and Garak goes
You are dishonorable.
Garak goes through this whole routine where he's asking Worf for a letter of recommendation to join Starfleet Academy. And he's just fucking with him, you know? But I also think that the in-universe explanation is not something new.
Not in utero.
We get spoiled watching the elite crew of the elite ships, they're always using transport. They use any resources they want. On Lower Decks, they are repeatedly showing us examples of where lower ranked people do not have access to as many resources, right? They don't have access to the same replicator menus. Mm. A Mariner at one point tries to call for an emergency transport and just makes up a code. And the guy is like, "What the who the hell is this? Yeah. Are you just making up a code?"
Yeah. The blueberries at the penal colony don't taste the same.
And yeah, and I think that—
Wait, that was from somewhere else.
That was from Discovery. I think that the increased use of shuttlecraft is an example, because in previous older Star Trek, there's been some indication that using the transporter is resource intensive and is not something you do unless you kind of need to, right? Now on TNG, they, you know, later on they play around, they loosen that up a little bit, but every now and then it pops back in and you hear stuff about transporter credits, you know, I've run out of transporter credits or whatever. So that's, it's just another way they're
scarcity.
Yeah, they're flavoring this universe.
It's not supposed to be scarcity.
To show that there is—
I'm just kidding.
That it's a post-scarcity world in that they're not going to go hungry, but they might not, you know, get the extra cool flavor of truffle popcorn.
Yeah, post-scarcity doesn't mean you just get infinite of everything you ever
exactly,
want.
Exactly, yeah. It just means that there's enough. There's enough for everybody, right? It's like, otherwise, why wouldn't everyone just be living on Earth in a giant mansion?
Yeah, right.
Because
right.
you don't
covered with donuts.
Yeah.
Covered with donuts. Yeah. I used to dream as a kid, like my fantasy, you know, when you go to sleep, sometimes you have little fantasies. One that was a recurring fantasy, you know.
Do you know that audience?
I know. All about that.
You know about them dreams?
You close your eyes and then just something.
No, I'm not talking about dreams. I'm not talking about dreams. I'm talking about before, just to sort of help settle my mind, like counting sheep. So I would have
post-masturbation, pre-sleep.
I had this fantasy as a kid that I would live in this house that had one room, and all that room did is if you reached in it and pulled your hand out, you'd have a cheeseburger. And it wasn't like any specific cheeseburger, but all you do is reach in the room and pull your hand out, and you got a ready-made cheeseburger.
Did it have bacon?
It's just a cheeseburger.
What kind of cheese was it?
No, that's the point, is it's whatever.
That's the point,
whatever.
Jesse.
It's whatever.
It inherits cheeseburger. They have that in Harry Potter. It's called the Room of Requirement, and it's kind of awesome. It's a secret room that when you go into it, it has whatever it is that you need. And the cool part about that room is—
I require cheeseburgers.
It even has stuff that, like, if you don't realize you need it, sometimes you'll have to figure out why is it giving you this thing.
Because, like barbecue sauce.
That's pretty— it's like,
yeah, barbecue sauce.
What do you mean?
Well, if you got a cheeseburger room and then it's got the other stuff, it's like, well, I didn't think about putting barbecue sauce on my cheeseburger.
Oh, yeah. I see where you're—
I was there with you, Dan. I was a little perplexed.
Just like barbecue sauce.
No. It all makes sense now.
It does. It does.
We've pulled it together.
I don't know if this can be considered a joke or a reference because it just happened all the time and it is like what everyone jokes about. But when Freeman and Shax and Ransom, we already talked about this, but when they're enlisted to, like, you know, they get the top three people, you know, the highest ranked people on the thing, and they go to a planet and, like, to germinate some roulette seeds, but they were talking about how it's this disputed territory thing, and it's like, right, how it's always Data and Riker, and some, like, they send Picard, even, I mean, they were trying to set him up, but still, it's sketchy to send your captain to— point being is, like, that couldn't even be really considered a joke or a reference because it's just what happened. But, like, at the same time, you look at it, it does sort of remind you, the way with the roulette seeds and everything, it sort of points out in my head, like, the absurdity of, like, the whole thing.
Well, so. it's a subtle meta reminder that this is a storytelling.
You need a mental reminder.
It's a storytelling device, right? And right. So the Star Trek will, any given show, it sets up its rules and then is perfectly happy to break those rules when it feels compelled to in order to tell the good story.
And the main characters are usually the top guys, and so they're the ones that are going on the adventures.
Sure.
In this story, the top guys are like the side characters, but they're still doing that thing.
And in TNG, for example, right from the beginning, right from Encounter at Farpoint, they make a big deal about how it's inappropriate for captains to go on away missions, right? And they actually do pretty well with that. But of course, anytime it's more interesting to have Picard on the away mission, he just goes down and just overrules Riker, you know? So they do what they want. And by the way, that's the way to tell a story.
Speaking
right?
of Encounter at Farpoint.
Oh, the jellyfish creature. Yeah. No, absolutely. Clear reference to that.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, at first I couldn't figure out what the first viewing I had no... I don't think I paid close enough attention or something. I don't know what it was, but I couldn't figure out what the deal with that creature was. Because I was like, did the ship turn into a creature?
Classic space jellyfish.
Classic stage. But how did it come to be? I didn't know...
That's a class M space jellyfish.
If the ship turned into this thing or if the creature ate it...
I think it infiltrated inside.
Or if the creature became one with it, or was it always that creature? And I wasn't sure if it was, but that's when it was on the second viewing, which it took me that long to come to the conclusion that, the creature infiltrated and turned it into its home
ate it out from the inside like a wasp larva out the brains of an ant.
Well, I think I was much cuter when I said snailian.
Yeah,
snail
no, alien. I was wondering. Yeah,
and like,
other than
like mosquitoes eating, but that's that was more accurate.
That was really
what you said.
That was really cute and like totally on the nose, and like it took me a while to get what the hell you were talking about.
And you never know with podcasts, you never know. You put out the episode, and you're like, that was okay. Like we're good because you said snailian. The rest of this could be total shit, and the audience could completely reject us.
I think this is one of those episodes where we don't think we're doing so hot, but it actually is like...
But Dan said snailing.
It's all like improv-y and
like, we're good.
Riffy and jammy.
I think this is... I think we're doing a bang-up job. I think. I do.
I think my performance...
You drifted into a little cockney.
I think my performance is especially good.
My wife chased me up the apples and pears.
Whatever it is, I think I see becomes a Tootsie Roll to me.
Not a fan of Tootsie Rolls.
No, they're weird.
They suck.
It's like fake chocolate taffy or something.
So we have a really large international...
Nutella is not chocolate, but it is cocoa.
No, Nutella. No. Nutella is chocolate, but mixed with hazelnut.
Okay. Nutella is fine. Delicious.
It's chocolate mixed with hazelnut.
I thought it was like just cocoa.
Nutella is the best, and Tootsie Rolls are the worst.
No. You should spread them. No. Spread Tootsie Rolls on... Tootsie Rolls, melt Tootsie Rolls and
Tootsie
spread
Rolls,
them on bread.
Tootsie Rolls are the second or third worst, right?
Nutella is at the top of the pyramid of chocolate.
The bottom pyramid. So the second or third row of that pyramid is made up of like 1,000 Tootsie Rolls, but the very bottom is made up of the worst thing, which is a Tootsie fucking Pop.
Oh, yeah, they somehow make Tootsie Rolls even lower quality Tootsie Rolls.
And the fucked up thing about
a Tootsie Roll
Pop,
and cover it with some weird
candy. I credit the existence of Tootsie Pops. I'll give them the credit. I will give credit where credit is due. Credit the Tootsie Pop people encouraging me, I think, to become more observant.
Because that's where you're going with
because
that.
Because what happens is if you're not observant and you're a young child and impressionable and eager and not considering the decisions you make in life, and somebody hands you a pop and you think it's a blow pop.
Yeah, it's not a blow pop.
And you start sucking on it.
It's not even a dum-dum.
Like a blow pop, and instead of being rewarded with a delicious sweet gum that has flavor that lasts about 5 seconds, but it's a fucking great 5 seconds, you end up with a sour, pseudo-chocolatey,
you get the
gummy mess.
The gum, and it's got all those crunchy bits in it, and you're just like, and then of course it sucks after that, but like...
Yeah, then you get another blow pop.
The moment with the candy bits in the gum is...
Oh, yeah, that's the best crunching.
Oh, my God.
Patrick, you got to be careful, though, because if you keep throwing around that word pop like that, people think you're talking about a Coca-Cola or something like that, you know?
Only if in certain regions of the North American...
I have nothing against...
I dated a girl that said pop.
I know people that I respect highly that say pop.
Past tense is key, and that's...
Dang.
You got a point. We welcome all people, edict, infinite diversity and infinite
all
combinations.
Creeds and edicts.
I am guessing that a lot of people who say pop probably don't listen to this podcast.
Yeah,
yeah.
Not for any specific reason. I think it's just a vibeness.
Hopefully we get people that say fizzy drinks.
Fizzy drinks.
That means they're not in.
What about
people who call all sodas Coke?
Yeah.
Oh no, they do that.
In Atlanta and Georgia.
Yeah, they do that out in Oklahoma and stuff.
Sprite.
All right. I want a Coke. You mean a Coke or a Sprite Coke or
Oklahoma.
Just skip that whole first step. There's no reason for it. But I guess somebody must have a reason for it. But pop.
Yeah.
You know.
I don't drink soda anymore. How about you?
I indulge. It's one of the few things that I like.
There's a Coke Zero shortage.
I like this bubbly.
Is it really?
Well, there's a shortage. I know this is fascinating Star Trek content, but there is in fact. shortage. I believe it's an aluminum can shortage.
Oh man!
And so all the drinks companies they're consolidating.
First world problems.
So they've reprioritized using complicated, you know, using a lot of calculus, a lot of economic graphs and stuff to map it all out. And then there's like a little dot, and that dot says we need to produce more regular Coke. And less of the, so you're not seeing as like all the Coke, vanilla Cokes, and all that other stuff. Ooh, you can't find them.
Bummer.
They'll come back. They're
vanilla
not.
Vanilla Coke is.
How long would you say this has approximately been going on for?
The last few months.
Yeah.
That would make sense.
You can go.
Like after the toilet paper supply got like straightened out, like the Coke.
Now we're in a Lysol spray problem.
And we are taping this, abridging the days, September 18th and 19th, crossing over the days on the East Coast. Starting here and going there. But anyway, so
hither and yon.
I think that we did enough show, right? We talked about everything.
I think we got it.
All right.
I think it got Star Trek.
All right.
It got it.
Cut, lock, close the gates.
Hold on to Facebook, Instagram.
Hold on to your butts.
It's got Star Trek.
Hold on to your butts.
Facebook, Instagram, it's got Star Trek. Feedback.
We're out.
Contact.
That's it, man.
All right. Yeah. What is it, Dan? Email is feedback@itsgotstartrek.com.
I keep trying to remember what I was going to say after you were talking about like people listening to people drinking pop, and those people don't listen to our podcast, and people.
I hope they do. But
I hope they do
don't.
Too.
They
I hope they invite
don't.
Us. I hope they invite us to their lovely, lovely little homesteads.
Yeah, I was going to say something, and then you talked about like ordering a Coke. That which means I remember what I was going to say now.
You can go bowling on Friday nights.
Because he talked about that
drinking
Coke.
Some pop.
He talked about Coke referring to all sodas, and that caught my attention because like yeah, and then I forgot what I was going to say. So when you have bubbly water like that from let's say you had a soda stream or seltzer or whatever,
we call it soda water.
Soda water. Okay.
But
soda
I'm sure
water.
Not everybody calls that seltzer. Soda water. Some people might call it pop water.
Pop water. Pop water.
Some people call it water with gas.
Yes.
Yeah, that's water. Weird.
Well, that's what you know in
Italy.
In Germany.
Oh,
it's
you know
like
what?
That.
You're right. Yeah, you're totally right.
Because I ordered the ordered and like the waiter was like, "Here is your water with
Wasser
gas."
Mit gas.
And I was like, "What?"
Blasenwasser. Spritz.
Do you know anyone Spritz? that might say fizzy water?
Children.
Yeah.
my children.
What about
people in Britain say fizzy drinks? What? But that's just a general soda.
They also say shandy.
Yeah.
Shandy.
That's like
mom.
That's like a beer with some milk in it or something. Mm-hmm.
No, I think it's a beer with like lemonade or something.
Lemonade.
Like, something
baby
like
carriage
that.
Is a pram.
Yeah.
A truck is a lorry.
So have you ever thought of taking the word fizzy water and changing the fizzy?
Trunk is a boot.
To instead of saying fizzy, you say fuzzy.
And in Canada, they say a boot.
Fuzzy.
Fuzzy?
Instead of fizzy, you say fuzzy.
Yeah, I could do that.
Yeah, you
do what?
Have some fuzzy
drink? I can say fuzzy.
No, but instead of fizzy water, you instead change the F
no,
word.
Yes, I can do that.
Yeah. Do what?
I can say fuzzy instead of fizzy.
But the whole thing, do you know what the whole phrase I'm going for is?
No.
Fuzzy water. That's what I'm trying to get you to say.
Why?
Did you know I was making that connection?
Fuzzy.
We do not yet recognize the connection.
I was very obvious with the connection. I said, you know, some people call it fizzy water. What if instead of fizzy water, you changed fizzy to fuzzy? That's very clear.
And then
that
fuzzy
is
water?
Super clear. I don't know how I can be any more clear than that.
All right. What's the email?
So fuzzy water. Would you ever call it fuzzy water?
Yeah.
Wherever you're going, whatever.
I'm not making a joke.
Whatever.
This is not a joke.
Path you're taking us down.
This isn't a joke.
Jesse says yes. I say no. Pick whichever one is required for your punchline.
There's no punchline.
What do you want to hear?
I just thought, like, what would you think of people that said that? Because I was like, what did you think of fizzy water? And you were like, children. And Jesse was like, England. So what do you think about fuzzy water? That's what I was going for.
I like fuzzy.
Okay, well, I'm going to ask this.
That's all I was saying.
I'm going to ask this again some other.
You're like, what do you mean?
I'm going to ask this again some other time when people have their heads together a little bit better.
What's the email?
I don't know, Jesse. What's the email?
I forget. I don't know why you asked me.
It's got Star Trek. Oh, no, wait, no.
Now you don't even know.
This
it.
Is episode 43
of
Fuzzy Wuzzy.
Fuzzy was Fuzzy. Wait, no shit.
Fuzzy Wuzzy was a bear.
Feedback.
Moving right along.
There I was about to do it correctly.
Okay, do it.
Moving right along. Feedback at itsgotstartrek.com.
All right, Jesse's lunching out over here.
Then if you want to reach us on
this whole thing about fuzzy water.
You're tearing up a little bit over there.
Jesse has removed a handkerchief from his pocket and is wiping tears from his eyes as he guffaws and tries not to laugh into the microphone.
Good work, Jesse.
All right, so
off mic.
I know it was
social
great.
Media.
Great.
Social media.
At Twitter or Instagram, you can do at It's Got Star Trek. And if you want to go to Facebook, you can just search for It's Got Star Trek. You can put an at the beginning, but you don't have to with Facebook. And we're also on YouTube. But by YouTube, there's no fancy visuals or
you
anything.
Enunciate almost as clearly as Ted Wasanasan.
Yes. We're on a King of the Hill kick today.
You enunciate super nice.
Yeah.
Super nice. Tractors?
That ship at the end looked pretty, though, when it was that thing inside, when it was the alien.
Yeah,
thing.
When the alien had finished eating it.
Snailian.
They have these brief moments of real kind of hopeful Star Trek majestic stuff. They've been doing it a lot. I like it.
Yeah, and when Amina was like talking about looking at Ransom's phaser or whatever or photon torpedoes, well, you think
his penis.
Yeah, that was his penis.
Yeah,
it's just funny she said that to Mariner because there was already kind of an interesting thing between. Mm-hmm. Anyways, so that's neither here nor there.
YouTube, you can find us on YouTube.
She made a point of saying it was super gross. Oh yuck.
Yeah, right. Super she was over the top,
gross.
Wasn't she?
Oh,
no. She's like, no, that's gross.
Not the penis, just the concept of seeing
what was attached to the penis.
The penis is quite likely high quality on whatever particular metric you might. You know, this is a subjective viewpoint to a certain degree.
He is a commander.
Is that the requirement? So Commander Riker, Commander Spock, Colonel Kira.
It's Colonel Kat.
She's a major.
No, Colonel Kat is your that's a separate problem you have with T'Ana.
She's just a cat in the coat.
Yeah. All right. So, YouTube, Instagram, all that other stuff.
And that was a weird line when they said that.
It was.
I really liked it for some reason.
Yeah, I did too. That's funny.
We don't know what the next episode's called because they're being stingy with giving us these episode titles, but you'll figure it out.
Stingy.
It's episode 8. 8. 8 is enough.
It will be our 44th episode.
It will be our 44th episode. It will be full of all sorts of tomfoolery.
The 50th anniversary.
50th anniversary. Yeah, no, it's true, because we do one episode a year. If this is the first time you're listening to this, it's because we release one episode per year.
Yeah.
As improbable as that sounds.
Yeah.
Probably certain continuity issues with that statement.
We're 110 years old.
All right. So, next week, come back. Just download the episode. It's really not that difficult.
No.
It's really not that fucking difficult. You download the episode.
You're turning into one of those guys that harasses the audience. You watch this and don't subscribe, you're a piece of shit. I mean, fuck off.
If you're already listening to us, then you know how to listen to us next week.
If you listen this far, although I wonder if there are, you know how there are those maniacs? And, look, more power to you out there. You do you do whatever you need. But, there's those maniacs who they open a book and then they read the last chapter of the book first to decide if they want to read the book. So that's crazy, right? So I wonder if there are people who are like that with podcasts, who they're perusing the internet and they come across a new podcast and they think, wow, that looks charming. That's got a charming, clever name. What exactly does that mean? I'm going to listen to that podcast.
It means it has Star Trek in it.
But I'm going to fast forward and only listen to the last 10 minutes. If that's the case, we might have a problem.
We're fucked. Yeah. That's it.
I've done that.
Either the first 10 minutes or the last 10 minutes.
I'll do that occasionally with an article I'm only half interested in. I'll start at the end and I'll read the paragraphs in reverse order. But
it's fine to read that if you're purely like, I'm absorbing factual information.
Yeah, right.
I mean, that's a tip they give you to read scientific studies and stuff.
Yeah.
You don't got to get all the particulars necessarily.
Like books, I don't even know what the. Yeah, that's.
But a
crazy.
Novel.
Yeah.
I mean, imagine opening the end of Lord of the Rings and just reading reading the last chapter. Anyway.
Yeah.
All right, so this is enough for this week. More,
you did that with like a movie. It's like
more next week.
Do that with like a comic book?
Well, here's where you could do it.
He said it was no more.
Where you could do it.
He's doing more.
If you're in Japan.
Yeah, totally.
Because the books go backwards.
I had a friend who was from Japan in like third grade, and he was showing me all those things, and he showed me how to pronounce the letters of the alphabet, basically, or the symbols of the alphabet, or whatever. And so I was reading it, pronouncing the symbols of the alphabet, but I still had no fucking idea what it said because it was in a different language. Mm-hmm. And so I was making like sounds that I didn't understand.
The books
it was interesting.
The books go backwards.
Yeah.
They drive on the left. and they occasionally have a highway.
Oh, do they do left?
A building.
They do left on in Japan.
That's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Are the wheels on the
bus going round and round
on the right side?
Oh, you mean the steering wheels?
Yeah.
I thought you meant the wheels.
The steering wheels. The car's wheels. I'm sorry.
Funny side. Wait,
yeah, Japan, the car's wheels are on the roof.
Does the driver sit in the weird side of the car?
Because
that's what's actually fucked up.
Yeah, that is weird.
That is fucked up.
The left side is not a big deal, but...
Apparently they think being right-handed means shifting with your left hand. I mean, to them it is. To everyone, teach their own. We all have preferences,
we're being
and
very
it's
progressive.
And there's no truthy or falsiness.
We're criticizing things and then protecting ourselves by
fuzzy.
Claiming to be progressive.
Yeah, but we still get to say it.
Yeah, fuzzy wuzzy water bear. All right,
okay.
that's enough. We'll talk to you. Presumably,
I'll tell you when I've had enough
next week.
Yeah.
Goodbye.
Good night.
That's right. Stare at me.
I wasn't staring.
The freak infected by an alien horse bite, doomed to live out his days as half a rascal. Everyone would rather avert their gaze instead of curing us. We're inconvenient.
But aren't there specialists who specialize in this?
Tell it to Ensign Jenna. Exposed to Delta radiation. Or Ellison Sanderson. Neutrino field transporter accident.
We have two of everything.
Almost everything.
And Anthony!
Hi, Anthony.
Did it used to be a man?
Yeah, that's what we're assuming.